I want to welcome you to today's edition of The Bradley Hall Show. And I am your host, The Bradley Hall. If you or someone you know has recently discovered through an at-home DNA testing kit that one or both of your biological parents are not who you always thought they were, I want you to know that you are not alone. In fact, there is a very large group of people just like you who have connected and bonded over this unique situation. I happen to be one of them. The group is sponsored by an organization called the NPE Fellowship. If you would like more information on how to join this group, please visit my website, www.thebradleyhall.com, and look for the free NPE Resources Kit. Simply submit your email, and I will send you an email full of links and resources to help you in your journey, including specific instructions on how to find and join the NPE Fellowship. We look forward to sharing your journey with you. Hi, and welcome to this edition of The Bradley Hall Show. I am here today with my friend Alicia, and Alicia and I met in the NPE Fellowship private Facebook group. Alicia is also an NPE, which stands for Not Parent Expected. And she has graciously agreed to join us today and tell her story. So welcome, Alicia.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm excited you're here. So, I am. So to start this off, I mean, we are NPEs. I just explained that's not parent expected, which means that you have discovered that one or both of your parents is not your biological parent.
Right. Sadly, just one is not my parent. So
I expected that to come early and often with this conversation.
Absolutely.
Story. So do you want to tell us a little bit? Just give us a little synopsis.
Yeah. This time last year, I'm coming up on my 1 year in a couple of days.
Okay. Of finding congratulations.
That's an NPE joke. I'm in a dysfunctional group with you guys, so it's all good. I'm glad to find new people. It's looking at the glass half full in this experience. I've met several great people, so it ended up working out well for me and learning my journey through this whole thing and to doing this to help other people. So I'm really thankful that you had me to talk on this and to just tell my story and share so it can maybe help others with the crappy situation I'm in.
That's the point. So I am grateful you're here for that reason as well.
No, I appreciate it. But so it was funny. So my best friend at the time had been diagnosed with terminal cancer. She was trying to find fun things to do while she was laid up. Her cancer spread to her brain. So by that time it was terminal. We would make jokes because my maiden name is Polish and her maiden name was Polish, that we would, you know, who was the most Polish. So I submitted my DNA, but she bought me a kit. She bought us a kit for a bet. By the time the results came back, she ended up being on hospice and passing away. So basically she won the bet. When I got mine back, it was, you know, straight up, I am the epitome of the white race. I am British and Irish. That's it. That should have been a red flag, but it wasn't. I guess I was kind of in like, oh, the British colonies took over a lot of places. So maybe they went to Poland, you know? So I'm just trying to figure out like, you know, time goes on, and it was probably about a year, I get this notification that a match hit. I didn't know that there was other people that matched to DNA for a year. So when I found it, I was like, who's this? And it was like a first cousin or something. So I called my dad, and I was like, you know, my birth certificate dad. And I was like, hey, do you know this guy? And I said the name, and he goes, no, it's probably your mom's bumpkin hillbilly family. And I said, okay, cool, I'll call mom. So I called my mom, and I was like, oh, you know, who's this? She goes, don't contact them. My dad was a merchant seaman, and he could have illegitimate children out there, and you could ruin lives. So I'm like, oh my gosh, Papa cheated on my mom. That son of a bitch, you know? So I was like, dude, that's, you know, so of course I'm like mad at this grandfather I never met, who supposedly I would look just like, ironically, since I didn't look like anybody in my family. Time goes on. I would say probably in about almost another year, got another hit. And during this time, I started doing investigating. Something wasn't right. I don't know, you get that inkling, something wasn't right. So still, I'm trying to chalk it up as, you know, DNA, blah, blah, blah. And that's when the close family member hit. It ended up being my biological father's sister. When that happened during this time, on top of it, I was going through, me and my husband had split up. We were going through a tough time in marriage. And it was shattering everything. It was like my world had crumbled around me, not dealing with a failed marriage, which I thought was at the time. And this news, I was like, wow, wonder how I'm gonna, you know, figure this mess out. Yeah. But ultimately, finding out, I couldn't sit with it. I did some investigating. I reached out. I waited a whole day before I, you know, approached my mom about it. Needed some time. She lived in Florida at the time. I live in Maryland. I waited a day. I called her and I said, who is this? Like, you gotta come clean. Like, you know, and I told her, I'm not mad, because I took a day to reflect and I was trying to put myself in her shoes. I don't know what it was at the time. I can't judge her. Who am I to judge anyone?
So I want to jump in here for a second, because I felt the same way. And the other people I've talked to all feel the same way. People are people and people make mistakes.
Absolutely.
And people have been having, they've been attracted to people they shouldn't be attracted to for thousands of years.
Right.
It's a different conversation on its own, but I'm with you. I was never upset about that.
No. The only thing that I was upset about is how I found out. I felt like finding out on the internet wasn't appropriate for this.
Absolutely.
You know,
I couldn't agree anymore.
Right. So again, I was okay. When I started noticing her reactions, when she realized, like, okay, she's not mad, you know, she did tell me his name, I looked him up and everything. She called me the following day, like nothing ever happened. Like, just, you know, just like, hey, what are you doing? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm just here picking up the pieces of my life and who I thought I was. How's your day going? You know, it was just like, you know, but I chalked it out. You know, this has been my whole life, you know, dealing with this woman. So, you know, I've dealt with a lot my whole life, and I've forgiven her for it. I'm practicing Catholic. That is a big thing that we practice, is forgiveness, forgiveness, forgiveness. So going into that, finally, I reached out, I found my birth family. Sadly, my birth father passed away 8 years prior to that. So I never got to meet him.
Sorry.
But the person I got a hold of was his sister-in-law. And when I could say that I hit the jackpot. Like, they were so welcoming, very nice people. They were just amazing people. I still talk to them, you know, they come and visit. I visit them a few times so far. They invited us to Thanksgiving. We went to Boston to Thanksgiving, really nice people. I called my mom. I told my mom about me going up. I mean, I jumped on a plane by myself, flew up there and stayed with them. I've never met them in person, never been to Boston. Wow. And I went by myself, and you know, my husband offered, and during this time, this saved my marriage. So, you know, this actually did. Like, this whole process saved my marriage. I really just leaned on him, and it ended up, like, you know, so when I say glass half full, there was pros that came out of this for me, in my personal life. So, so anywho.
Well, and I talked a little bit about that at my presentation for the conference, for the retreat.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
I was there.
And you were. I know you were. but in every traumatic situation, we're given a choice of how we're going to move forward. And it's either we can become a victim from it.
Absolutely.
Or we can let it change our lives for the better. And it sounds like that you were able to do that.
Yeah. I couldn't, I mean, for a day, I guess I did. I kind of like laid, you just can't lay and die. You have to, you just got to keep moving on, and you got to try it to, that's the only thing. Like, that's what I did. I have three kids. I have a husband. I had bills I had to pay. Like, life had to go on. It was just finding a new normal, which we hear that all the time as MPs, a new normal.
And I think it's important to also say that, you know, you said it took you a day, and for me it was a couple of weeks, and some people it's longer than that, you know. But I mean, so it's okay to feel what we're feeling.
Right.
At some point, you know, we have to pick ourselves up and we have to dust.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had at the time, when I say a day, like, I didn't leave bed. I cried hysterically. I'm a very, you've met me. I'm a very non-emotional person. Now I'm still dealing with this day to day. I just needed a day to where it just to pretty much die. Like, let me die and then I'll resurrect and go on with life. And I had a work meeting, like, when I'm a restaurant manager. So, I mean, I gotta go. I gotta make sure I'm here. And that's what kept me going as well, as my job, my kids, you know, every day. I mean, internally I was fighting. I was fighting. I like the emotions, the confusion, the everything. My husband said this was probably the worst thing he's ever seen. He was really genuinely concerned for me and my mental health.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So with what you just told me, and you told me that it resurrected your marriage.
Yeah.
Do you think that your vulnerability, your forced vulnerability in this situation allowed you to open up a part of yourself that you had never opened up to your husband, and that connection might have been this far?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am not a person to express anything. I'm very, and you probably know this from the same situation with us having the same kind of moms. Ultimately, you had to worry about other people. You couldn't ever worry about yourself and express yourself. You were scared to express yourself. So you crying was weak. Feeling sorry or being upset was weak. Everything was weak. You had, like, why, you know, it was walking on eggshells constantly through life. And you just had to triumph through it. And, you know, at the same time, as horrible as it was, but it did give me strength. It did give me strength through this. Again, this is just me with the glass half full. Like, it made me a tough person, I guess you can say. You know, but
the humility is the key piece. When people,
right?
People, and this isn't necessarily about relationships, but when people, especially like in divorce, when people become opposed to each other, they have a tendency to drive away from each other, because they're trying to protect their ego.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Michelle and I had, we almost divorced 15 years ago. We had a lot of problems, and we actually came back from, we resurrected our marriage from a place that most people would never, ever come back from. And only way we were able to do that was we both approached it with humility. We both acknowledged that we were at fault for the breakdown of the marriage, and we opened up sides to it. So that's the key that I want people to take away from, that we get so caught up and well, you did this, and well, you did that, and I'm going to do this, and this person's going to hurt me, that your marriage was about reconnection.
You have to meet in the middle. You have to see what you have done wrong. Yeah. And you can't focus on what they've done wrong. And that is also with this whole situation too.
As long as everyone's genuine.
Absolutely.
Because if you have a situation with someone who's...
You are absolutely right. Yes.
Yeah. You can't repair something if someone doesn't have the humility and right. genuine.
Absolutely.
Because we have a lot of people that are in abusive type situations, and this isn't going to apply to them at all.
This is null and void with that. Yeah. So, with my mom, it was mental abuse. It was constant. It was physical abuse when I was little, and mental abuse. And then once I got bigger than her, it went strict to mental abuse.
Yeah.
It was tough. It was absolutely tough.
So let's talk a little bit about, if you would, how is your situation with your mother after you confronted her with the truth?
It was fine. It was fine. She didn't want me to tell anybody.
How did you feel about that?
At the time, I don't know how to explain it at the time, because you would understand for so many years, it's almost like being brainwashed to appease everyone. You know what I mean? So, I appeased her. At the time I was like, okay, that's fine. She says, not even your husband, not even that. And I'm like, whoa, okay, cool. Which I didn't listen to her, of course. I told Matt and I just said not to say anything to anybody. But for her, that kind of was a red flag for me when she said, not even your husband. I'm like, so how am I supposed to deal? Like, what do you suggest? Like, she just thought like it was just like, oh, your dad's your dad. Like, who cares? Like, go on with life. What are you doing tomorrow? I'm like, this lady is crazy. Like, she really thinks like this is, So a couple months go by. I plan to go up and visit, and I tell her I'm open book with her. I didn't want to keep anything from her for her to find out. And this was when I started to, I didn't tell her that Jerry died. I didn't tell her that my birth father died, because why I didn't tell her? Because I didn't want to make her even like to regret not telling me, or to feel crap, like a POS. So I didn't tell her. So you have to understand, at this time I have, my birth father's dead. I'll never know him. I'll have to hear stories through him. I can't tell my mom, because my mom, gosh, she'll be devastated because, she didn't tell me at the right time. So I don't want her to have that burden on her. And my dad, I can't tell my dad, because that would destroy his life. So I have all this weighing on my shoulders. And I'm like, and I couldn't bring myself to do it at the time. So time goes on. I plan to go to Boston to meet them. This bitch, sorry, I know I'm not supposed to curse, but this bitch told, that I said, I'm going to go up and meet them, blah, blah. She goes, oh, well, I'm going to go with you.
That's interesting.
No, you're not. And I was like, no, mom, I need to do this on my own. I told, I was like, I got to do this on my own. She goes, I don't like you going to a major city by yourself, and I'll stay at the hotel room, and you can do your meetings while I'm there. I don't want you by yourself there. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe, but I still said no. I was like, okay, well, maybe she's just worried,
Did she still think that he was alive at this point, or had?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, time went on. Finally, as you know, with narcissistic, and I mean, with these women, she, I was at my cousin's birthday party over on the shore, which is like an hour and 15 minutes away. And we're driving back and she just randomly picks a fight with me via text message. Just random, like, mad that I was over there with her sister because she doesn't speak to her sister. She hasn't spoke to her sister in years. Mad that I'm over there and just wants to pick a fight with me over text. And like, not including her in things and and finally I was like, you know what? Jerry's dead. Jerry died. Like, I'm dealing with a lot right now. I don't need this. Because at the time, even a fight or an argument would just shatter me because of I was just so filled to the brim that I was overflowing. I didn't say it out of anger. I just said, Mom, Jerry died. Like, I'm trying to cope with this. I'm trying to deal with this. Please just give me some time, like, before you want to go in for the kill, please just, you know. And if her tongue was a knife, it would cut you. She says some really awful things. And then, of course, she was devastated. And she's like, he was my one true love and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and going back and rewinding everything, when I came and told her, and I forgot to say this, when I told her about, you know, everything, she goes, yeah, I was hoping that you wouldn't find out. I put it all in my will, like in my papers, my will, like my death papers. So when I died, you would find out. Mm. Oh, I appreciate you. Thank you for thinking of me. And not getting any answers. Like, and she was so cat, like, it was just like, I was gonna tell you, but it wasn't the right time. When I was dead would be the right time. Like,
wow.
Yeah. And she was like super, like, nothing was wrong with that.
So I wanna ask you, how did you feel about your mom not telling you that she was going to keep it a secret until she died?
How did it make me feel?
How did it make you feel? How does it make you feel?
It made me angry. It still makes me angry. I mean, this is my life. Like, this is my life. Yeah. You're playing with my life. Like, that's how I saw it. Like, you are basically just, and I just don't know what her thought process was.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you know, I'll get,
this is a constant subject, right? I mean, we're not the only ones, you and I are not the only ones.
No, not at all.
And when we tell a lie and we protect the lie invariably just gets bigger. And before long, it gets so big that it's bigger than life. It's a monstrosity.
Right.
And the harder, and then, the longer you go, the harder it is to tell the truth. And right. The longer you go, the more you believe it. And we've seen that a lot with these parents. And not, again, you know, it's not that they shouldn't be held accountable. It's just to understand why people do, because we take it so personally, right? It's us. Right. Like, why are you lying to me? And it is about us, but it's not about us. Their actions were not so about us. It was about them protecting themselves.
Right. And when you are born to parents at a minute old, we depend on them for everything in life. We depend on them for food, for water, for, you know, for life lessons. And when something like this hits you, like, you were lied to by these people that are supposed to guide you through life, that's a big hit. And that's a really hard thing. You know, they may not have been the greatest, you know, like, my mom wasn't the greatest mom, but do I have some good memories with her? Absolutely. I'm not gonna sit here and say everything was terrible, but there was a lot of bad stuff. It was a lot of bad. You know, and people, the common question I get asked, if you could change anything about your discovery, what would it have been? Like, what would you want to know, or would you want to not know? I'm sure you were asked that many times.
I ask people that question a lot.
And that's a very tough question. That's probably one of the most, like, you ever heard the saying, like, if you had one question to ask God, what would it be? I would be like, so, hey, you know, like, that's a tough question for me. I don't know. I honestly cannot answer if I would have wanted to know or not know. I don't know.
Because I can tell you unequivocally, I just want to know the truth. I'm a truth seeker. I've been reading, you know, religious texts since I was 12, trying to figure out the truth of what brought me here.
And the meaning of life. Absolutely.
The meaning of life. And so I say all the time that I can deal with anything as long as I know the truth. And so, so that's where I'm at. But you're not sure, huh? Yeah, I mean,
don't get me wrong. Like,
and I don't mean that derogatory.
I understand. No, I know what you're saying. When I did find out, I did go for the truth. Like, I did not settle. I mean, it almost became an obsession. Like when I say obsession, I mean, like, 3 o'clock in the morning on my laptop looking for this mystery person and buying background checks, putting, you know, it was an obsession. And that's the only way I can describe it takes you over. That's why I said, I'm saying I don't know, because I've spent hours till this day, even though I know who the guy is and everything, still to this day, I still am seeking for answers that I'm probably never going to get.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, yes. I don't know. Yeah. I'm seeking for answers because my birth father's dead. I don't know what transpired. I did later find out that when I was a baby, he came for me. He came for me. And my mom refused it because she had already had my dad, who raised me, believing that it was his. And she wasn't going to renege on that. So ultimately, he came, and he respected that.
I had the same thing. My biological father, after my parents were divorced, my biological father came to see my mother and asked, I was his child, and my mother emphatically denied and said that I absolutely was not his child, and that was the end of that. And then he died less than 10 years later. That was my decision,
right?
At that point I was in my 20s at that point, you know?
Right. So 19 comes around, I'm 19 years old. My parents divorced when I was 7. And they hated each other. My dad did not come to my wedding because my mom was there. That's how much of a horrible human she is. And he did not come to my wedding because she was going to be there. And she, you know, made this whole big stink because me and Matt eloped and went to the courthouse because we didn't get married Catholic. She wanted to put on a show as narcissist. Let's put on this big show. We need a Catholic wedding and a huge reception afterwards. And it was a total, it was just.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, Dad, you know, I understand. Like, was I upset a little bit? Yeah, I was upset, but I understood. Like, I more than understood why he didn't come. You know, it is what it is. I'm already married. I'm not upset. I didn't invite you to the first one. Don't worry about it, you know. So, you know, going back to that, you know, when I was 19, my mom and her best friend, which I called aunt, which you commonly do, got diagnosed with breast cancer. And they got into this huge fight. No one knew why or whatever. And my aunt died not speaking to my mother. Come to find out, that fight was about
you.
Me. My birth father reached out again when I was 19, looking for me. And my mom said, I told her about you and she doesn't want to meet you. So this man died thinking I wanted nothing to do with him. Meanwhile, I'm just living in butterflies and rainbows, thinking, and that eats at me. How can, like, it's, I'm trying to forgive her. I don't get me wrong. Like, I don't want to live with this anger for the rest of my life, but how do you forgive somebody like that? Maybe you can coach me in that.
That's the question of the day. I mean, it's a $1 million question. And we have this in common. So when I met my biological uncle, he's my biological father's brother. My biological father's passed, as well as two of his siblings. But I did meet my biological uncle last year. And he told me that my biological father told him before he died that he thought that he had a son that he had never seen before. Interestingly enough, my biological father had no other children. So not only was there deception that I was denied that opportunity and I wasn't allowed to meet my biological father, and then my birth certificate father raised me as his own without really knowing, or he suspected, he initially told me. But my bio father didn't have the experience to have a relationship with any children, and knowing that he potentially had a son that he could have had a relationship with, and
Yeah. It's
that
heartbreaking.
it is heartbreaking.
It is
It is.
heartbreaking.
And
It is.
but to answer your question, or to address what you said, the forgiveness is difficult because the anger it fuels the hatred. It sounds cliche, but it's absolutely true that forgiveness is about the person who was hurt more than it's about the person that does the hurting.
Yeah.
As we hurt, and this is constantly on our mind, we're constantly thinking. So when we're angry at someone, it consumes us. They're renting space in our head, and we think about it all the time. And in reality, that person isn't thinking about it near as much as we're thinking.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And so it's destroying us internally and disrupting our daily lives, and it's not affecting that person. So that's why you
Right.
hear the analogies that the anger is like throwing hot coals at someone. You may hit the person you're throwing it at, but you're damn sure going to burn your own hand when you pick them up and
Right.
throw them. So the
Yeah.
forgiveness comes beneficial to us, but
Yeah.
it's an individual thing. I mean, we have to do it in our own time. It comes in increments. It's not, you can't just wake up one day and be like, that's it, I forgive everybody.
Right.
It's an ebb and flow. You forgive people. And I've done a lot of work on that. And then recently, a couple times recently, I've had people in my life in this situation who punch my buttons. They know how to get to me, and they do it intentionally because that's what they do, is get people riled up and create
Yeah.
controversy.
A
And
lot, yeah, a lot.
it
Like,
doesn't matter how far I've gone,
right.
I still react, and I have to use my tools and work back through it.
Yeah, I mean, right. I went, well, going back, after I went to Boston, everything, it was fantastic. They showed me pictures finally. All I wanted was a picture, and I ended up getting so much more out of it. I met these great people, and when I say, and you've met me, and you know how loud and how crazy I can get, especially on vacation. That when I say I was amongst my people, I mean I was amongst my people. I finally found people that looked like me, who acted like it was insane. It was so surreal. Like it was amazing. And they shared so much with me about Jerry. They have been nothing but welcoming to me. I mean, I couldn't ask for a better situation. I the second time I went up, they wanted to meet the kids. And that was something that I kind of battled with, because this is going to impact them as well. My kids are 13, 11, and 6. My 11-year-old is on the spectrum. He's very immature for his age, but he's very high functioning. Like, you would never know. He has ADHD. So he, again, inherited those great genes from me and my husband. He will outrun you in a race. He'll run around the house probably about a million times, but he has a lot of empathy for people. And I chose who, and this is what I thought to myself, who was I to keep their deceased brother's grandchildren from them? That was something I battled with. But who was I to do that? They had more of a right
because than anyone. Because you know what that's like.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so I chose to share my news with my kids. My daughter, of course, didn't. She's worried about LOL dolls and whatever, and just being a princess for the day and living in her little imaginary world. So she didn't really understand. But the two older kids, I said, listen, I told just my oldest at the time, before we went on vacation to Florida with my mom, which I'll get into that whole fiasco after I found out. But I told my oldest boy, and then when we were planning to go up, I didn't tell the rest of them. So we went on vacation. I told my oldest, and he still to this day, and it was at a really trying time because he's an adolescent. So of course it's like going through the testosterone and puberty and stuff. So it impacted him as, who am I? Like, I thought I was this, and now like mom's telling me I'm not. So he struggles a little bit with it. He's getting better, thank God. You know, me and him work through it together, and my husband has been a great support. So going back, I went on a trip with, after I got back from Boston the first time by myself, I headed down to Florida to see my mom with the kids by myself. Matt said, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to do this? Every time you go down there, it's a disaster with her, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I need to talk to her face to face about this. Like, I need to know like more. So anyway, I ended up going down there, and Matt was right. It ended up being a huge disaster. She had me stuck. I had no car. We were in Disney, and she just started acting out and basically told the kids about Jerry in an angry way. Called my oldest son fat. Started gearing in for my kids to get a reaction out of me because I wasn't giving her one. So she started being nasty to my kids. And I snapped. I finally snapped. And I left. I called an Uber. I packed the kids up. And we went to a different resort in Disney. And I said, we are not going to ruin it. We are not going to let this ruin our vacation. We're going to have fun for the next 5 days. Let's go, kids. And we did. We salvaged the rest of our vacation. I was by myself with the three kids. My husband was devastated on the phone. He wanted to get down to us. Of course, he had work, and, you know, but we salvaged it. And that's when I explained to Colt, my middle son, who had no idea what the situation was. And I was forced to do that. It wasn't on my terms. So explaining that to him, it actually, and again, glass half full, it kind of gave me some strength in that to tell him and to explain to him and to get him prepared to go up and meet, you know, his family and my family. And we probably about a month after that, we drove up to Boston and visited with them, and it was fantastic. They absolutely adored them. I mean, we went to a birthday party. It was awesome. It was fantastic.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because you know, in the group, there are a lot of people who don't have the experience with their new family, with their bio family that you've had. And I've had my so far, they've been great. I've only met my biological uncle, but I have a whole tribe of people who look just like me in Ohio, and I can't wait to get up and meet them.
The
situation has limited me from doing that, but I hope to do that this summer. But we may be the exception. There's a lot of people who have a lot of horror stories.
And that's what devastates me about reading those stories about people. You know, I was blessed to have people open their door to me. There are so many people that just get the door slammed in their face.
Yeah.
I'm dealing right now with, ironically, when I was on the retreat in Texas, a girl messaged me on Facebook looking for her dad, who ended up being Matt's best friend. And he had no idea. This girl's 17 years old, looking for her biological father, which was my husband's best friend. So to help him from her standpoint of her view, it really, he said, honestly, I don't know what I text him every day. He's been texting me, giving me, you know, like venting to me because he can't talk about it. You know, it ultimately ruined his marriage. He's trying to, you know, even though they weren't together, the wife and stuff, that's where a lot of these problems stem from, because these birth fathers are in this predicament that I have my wife and then I have this illegitimate child.
Right.
And we come in like these wrecking balls, and we don't mean to do that, but it does. We come in like a wrecking ball to this family, and they're trying to sort out, and I'm just trying to be, I'm not trying to be biased at all with this. And yes, these men need to stand up and do what's right. If their wife isn't understanding about this or whatever, then maybe they should question what kind of person they married, because that they need to have a heart for these people. Like these, all they want is answers. And all they want is answers, you know, and
it gets back to feeding the lie. The lie becomes unmanageable, becomes so big. Right. And, you know, you bring up a critical point. There's a lot of people that are in the group and people that I've worked with that, for example, that the new wife will forbid the husband to reciprocate contact.
And also, it isn't even, sometimes they don't even share with the new wife. They won't even share because they want to keep it a secret. So that's their selfishness. If they don't share with their, you know, they're in a place where, and this is me just having this reflection just recently with my friend, and seeing what he's going through with this whole situation, it's showing me another perspective. It's showing me their perspective. And I mean, this guy is at rock bottom right now. He has no wife right now because he's not going to choose. He's choosing his kid. Like, he's doing the right thing.
I want to jump in here because he's not necessarily choosing the kid. He's just
choosing
what's right.
Absolutely.
And this is where this correlates with mothers who are hiding the secret from their children, which is the dominating theme of the group. And something I learned a long time ago, 15 years ago today, as a matter of fact, Michelle and I were on the brink of divorce, and 15 years ago today, we decided to stay married. And one of the things that was a very, very powerful lesson for me that I did not understand from my upbringing is that you give people the opportunity to make the decisions. That's why I'm doing this podcast, because I want to talk about the truth, and you give people all the truthful pieces they need to make the decision that's best for them.
Right.
And we get caught up in trying to manage and it's actually manipulation. We don't think it's manipulation. We're like, oh, I shouldn't tell this person for this reason, or I shouldn't tell this person for that reason, or this shouldn't do that. And you've got all these moving pieces. When in reality, when you stand up and you say, this is what happened, and I'm here to explain it if you want to listen. If you don't, that's your prerogative. And you give people the choices that they need.
Right.
And people can navigate. Instead of this, we come down to the having your cake and eat it too. And it's not always as narcissistic as it sounds. A lot of times you're really trying to keep people, you have the idea of what you think are other people's best interests in mind, but in reality it comes down to people need to make the decision for themselves. you know, you and I should have been told at a young age. I should have been, I don't know what that age is. I don't know if it's 7, I don't know if it's 12, I don't know if it's 18, I don't know if it's 24. I don't know. But at some point, I should have been told before I was.
Absolutely.
Allow me to make the decision. And your friend is doing the right thing by saying, standing up and owning it, manning up. I don't like the term man up because, we got fathers and mothers and every, you know, across the board.
Own your shit. Own it. Yeah. Exactly. Own it.
Yes. Have the humility to say, I'm sorry this happened. I made a mistake. What can we do to fix it? And if the person, you run the risk of the person say, I can't deal with this and I'm leaving. And that's, you know, unfortunately that's a side effect of it, but.
No,
and respect to people to give them the opportunity to make
absolutely. And this goes to another point of you of what you just said, telling the truth. Like, it's been a year. I haven't told my dad who raised me. I haven't told him. I every time I think I'm gonna do it or just to share with, because I'm close to my dad. And every time I just look at him and I'm like, I can't do it. I cannot physically get the words out of my mouth because I think it would devastate him. And I don't want him to feel an ounce of what I felt. You know what I mean? So that's where I'm stuck at right now in dealing with this.
And it sucks because theoretically it's your mother's responsibility to tell him.
Absolutely. And she won't. She'll never do it. And knowing, and this is another thing, is that her dad was raised, my mother's dad, was raised by his grandparents thinking his mom was his sister.
So she knows.
And when I submitted my and he found out when he was a teenager, ran away, and it was a turmoil of substance abuse. He died at 45 years old. I never knew him. He died, he got in a motorcycle accident, and because his liver was so bad from alcoholism, they couldn't save him.
That's too bad.
And you know, and knowing and seeing that and knowing that, she's still, like, that's what blows my mind about this, that she had she's seen what it did to her dad, you know? And when I submitted my DNA, I found his birth father's family. He has a brother. When I was in Texas for the retreat, I went over to Houston, which was 3 hours away. I drove and took pictures to him of his brother. His half brother that he never knew about. This guy's in his 80s now. And, you know, and I solved that piece of the puzzle for my grandfather. You know, even though he's not here, I solved that piece. And I will continue to do that. I will continue to help whoever is in this situation. I'm trying to help myself, but as you know, as us as with narcissistic mothers, we have been molded to help others before we help ourselves. That's what we were made to do. That's what we had implemented into our brains. And I still continue it because it's almost like I will sacrifice myself before I would, you know, do any, you know what I'm saying?
There's actually two points with that. You know, the first one is that we have to learn boundaries. We have to learn to protect ourselves. And I know you're doing that, and that's hard because I'm doing it myself. I've been doing it for 15 years, and every time I think I've got it licked, something else pops up, and it's a journey. You know, it's not a destination. But the second thing is that it's okay to use. I was raised to put everyone else's feelings before mine. While I'm simultaneously learning boundaries and learning to take care of myself, I use my what is my natural instinct, who I am, who I've been conditioned to be, to help other people, and that advocacy helps me heal as well because I get to be able to share these new things that I'm learning, and be able to get to share them with people who are behind me, who are just now experiencing it, and help them grow. And that advocacy is actually, you know, it's part of the 12-step program to go back and find other people who need your direction, who are behind you. There are people that are ahead of us and there are people that are behind us. And if everybody's always looking back and helping the people behind them, then that's how we get along and we heal. And so the fact that we have been conditioned that way can still be used for good, and I think that's okay.
Absolutely.
We don't want to deny who we are.
Right.
Use that here while we're simultaneously learning.
Yeah. And that's going back to what I said in the beginning, like it's almost like the glass half full. I'm a huge person. That's a quote I use all the time. The glass half full is, it taught me to be a good person, to care for others. At the time it was a tool of manipulation and such, but it ended up being a huge beneficial tool for me to care for others and to help others. And, and I'm thankful for my mother for that. As crazy as it sounds, I actually am thankful for the way I was raised, because it made me so strong. I definitely have problems. Don't get me wrong.
It made you who you are.
Yeah.
And the butterfly effect, any one thing changes, you end up at a complete, have you ever seen the movie, The Butterfly Effect?
Yes.
Ashton Kutcher. Any one thing in your life changes, you're in a completely different place and a completely different person the way you are than where you're at right now and who you are. So there's a lot of gratitude in that. You know, we all have our issues. Everyone's fighting a battle you can't see. And it could always be worse, right? I mean, understanding that and being able to have a little gratitude where you were, and you have that, that because of your experiences that you are who you are. And I think having the gratitude for that is a huge, huge piece. It's the foundation of our recovery. And I really believe that.
Yeah, it is. It is. And also another thing that taught me as well is that, my mom taught me how to be a good mom. She did. She taught me how to be a good mom. I never wanted to be like her. And because of that, I strived as a parent to not be anything like her as a mother. And my kids are fantastic kids, and they come to me with everything. Things that I don't even want to know about, they come to me about, So there is so many beneficial things that, I learned from my journey so far that, again, right now, answering your question, what I wanted to know or what I've not wanted to know, today, I'm glad I know. Tomorrow may be different. My questions on life change every day. I don't know if that's the Aquarius in me or what, but every day is a different day. Today, I chose not to tell my dad. Tomorrow, I may. I can't say for certain what life is going to throw at me, but to have the tools to with this, and I highly stress this to the people that are listening, is that the NPE group that Kat found for us has not only helped me, but it's helped thousands of people.
Literally thousands.
And when these retreats come up that they do, I highly recommend them. I mean, these retreats have given me so many tools to use and to feel like, and when you tell somebody this, well, your dad's still your dad. Like, what changes? It's just your dad. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know. But they don't understand. So when you get with people like us in these group settings and go through this and talk our stories, they know exactly how you feel. And that is probably the biggest blessing in finding the group. And also going back to advocacy, I would love to stick it to these DNA groups and say, put something in place for people. Donate money to Catherine. Like, donate money and help with our group, because you are referring people to this group, but you're not doing anything on your end to help these people. And they should be, they're making millions or billions, I don't know, but they're making so much money off these kids. Donate some of it. Donate to a cause that is, because you are opening Pandora's box, and you guys know you're opening Pandora's box. Put something in place. And for those who are listening that don't know about a group, which if you listen to Bradley, you know, but the MPE group, MPE Friends, is the way to go. And you will get your story out there, and you will be surrounded by many arms knowing exactly how you feel.
So I'm glad you brought that up. The MPE Fellowship, you can contact more. You can find more information on my website. I have an MPE kit, information kit that I'm building as we go along, adding more information. But I think the first link in the kit is to the MPE Fellowship and how to get to the group. You can't just join the group directly. You can't find it directly. But it is, we will get you in there, and it's a life changer. It's a game changer. There's doubt about it. To be surrounded, it's our tribe. It's people that are going through. It's people that are going through what we've gone through, and it's 7,000 of us. So it let me know immediately. I was like, hey, I felt like the only person in the world this happened to. And then now I know that there's 7,000 people in this group, and there are many, and the key statistic is I think only 13% of the people in the group are men. It should be closer to 50. So that tells me there are thousands and thousands and thousands of more people out there who have no idea this group exists.
And also, like, even for spouses of men who are going through this, men like to put on this, you all like to put on this persona, like, oh, it is what it is, blah, 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 blah. But realistically, like, you guys are harboring a lot inside. Yeah. All men are bred to do that. All men are bred to be the strong, the leader, like the supporter. And I'll help you with your problems. My husband's the same way.
I actually had a friend the other day. I'm a trauma recovery coach. He knows that I'm send me a private message. And the first words he said were, don't tell anyone, but I started going to counseling. And it's very telling. The first words of don't tell anyone are very, very telling about mental health in general. It's a stigma for everyone. Right. But I think men have an extra layer of, I think you're right, that we have an extra layer. And,
absolutely.
And the statistic I gave you says that right there. So absolutely, if we have women out here that your husbands are going through this, they may need more help than they're letting on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Support.
Absolutely.
Support's the word I want to use. I don't want to use help. Support.
Yeah. Support. Yeah. Real men show their emotions. Right. But no, and again, going back to spouses too, like some story, I mean, again, all around, I was blessed with a great support with my husband, but some stories I read that some of the spouses aren't, I don't know any advice. Maybe you would have great advice for that, Brad, but just you have to get your emotions out. If they won't listen, go to the face. Just, it's like an open journal. It is, and you just get off your chest everything that you want in this group, and you'll get good feedback most of the time. And
I do have some advice for that. One of the easiest things to do is journal.
Yeah.
And the group gives you that. And that's your point. I don't mean to dismiss your point. The group gives you that. But some people still aren't ready to even share, on Facebook. But just journaling and even write it by hand. That there's something about putting it from your brain to your hand to paper that is very, very therapeutic. And I tell people, I don't care if you burn it or you throw it away after you're done. You don't have to show anyone. You don't have to keep it. But get it out.
Right.
The more we tell our story, which is why we're doing this, the more we tell our story, the more we normalize it. There's so much shame with keeping it in. We're ashamed of somebody's secret or somebody's mistake. Yeah. We got to keep it in. And the more we tell it, we would get in the group and we tell it, and it becomes second nature. You're doing this. Tell this is a huge step. Today is a huge step for you. Am I wrong?
No, this is a huge, huge step for me. I kicked it around if I was going to do it or not, to be honest. And I chose to. I did. I chose to do this because I want my story to be heard. Because, again, this is the narcissistic mom in me of empathy saying, I want to help others, and my story, I hope, will help others. And, you know, and that's the only reason I did this, is because, again, also, you have great advice. The BradleyHall.com has great advice. So go make sure you go in to his website. But it does. It's to have the support and get advice from people who understand is, and to hear and to know, it is, it's been a life. It's been, again, a game changer. It really has. So,
well, I appreciate the shameless plug. It sounds better coming from you than it does for me. So greatly appreciate it. I'm glad that thank you for doing this.
No problem.
Glad that we're able to get the word out and help other people. I'm glad that it helped you, and it helps me. Every time I tell my story, it helps me as well. So thank you so much for joining me.
Not a problem. Anytime.
Yeah. So
who knows? This might be a hit. You might need me again.
I hope so. I hope you go viral. So, okay. Well, again, thank you. I appreciate it so much.
And, no problem.
You know, I'm sure I'll talk to you soon.
And, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Until then, take care of yourself.
I will. Thank you, Brad. I appreciate you. Okay. All right. Bye-bye.